Good morning. I particularly like the one because of my not wonderful feelings about heights. I particularly like the one that said I stepped out of a perfectly good plane. Well, this morning I got up a little bit before six and I went to let the dogs out and it was just, the sun was just starting to come up and it was beautiful. You know, that orange against the skyline and you could hear birds singing. It was just gorgeous. It made me think that spring is coming. And in fact, they're putting up that stand thing for the vegetables and fruits and, you know, all that over here on Duchesne. And yoo-hoo, it's almost spring. It was another morning. Now, I've had lots of days, lots of mornings in my life, lots of mornings in my life. And this particular morning reminded me of many mornings. What do I do each morning? I think I already shared this with you, but I'll say it again. A couple of weeks ago, I had an experience where I woke up and I have to, when I wake up and if I want any time in bed before I get up, I have to stay very still because my dogs know if I start moving that it's time to get up. So I stayed very still and I was laying there thinking about what the day, you know, what I needed to do and what was going to happen and stuff. And this is the part I think I shared with you already, but a memory popped in my head as I was laying there that I remembered a conversation that I'd had the day before. It was an unexpected conversation, and I don't remember who it was with or what the topic was now, but that morning I was, oh, that was such a nice surprise. You know, it was totally unexpected. I didn't expect to encounter this person. I didn't expect to have this wonder, for that to have that impact on me. And it kind of, remembering that changed my morning. So as I was laying there very still to not wake up the dogs or let them know I was awake, I thought, if that happened yesterday, it could happen today. So it, and it's kind of stuck, that whole way of thinking, what does this day bring? That sense of anticipation has kind of stayed with me. And I like that. I think it's a good thing. We've been talking about possibility, and so it fits in really well if we begin to think about anticipation. How can we do that? Another thing that I realized as I was thinking about this topic and today, I started thinking about my memory bank and what are the top memories? What are the best things that I remember? It occurred to me that they all have to do with people. The really good ones. You know, they're all people based. Now, I've had lots of great experiences in solitude and stillness and meditation. Those times are nourishing, they feed me spiritually. But that's not what it is in my memory bag. My memory bag is those peak experiences. I think we've all had peak experiences, certainly. The births of my two children, way up there. I can get teary just talking about the miracle of birth. You know, so those were peak experiences. My ordination is one of them. So the memories are about being with people. The really good memories. So in my anticipation and realizing that my memories are all, my good memories are all about people, then it kind of makes sense that I would link the two, that I would be very interested then in being able to engage with people in meaningful ways to enhance the opportunity to put more wonderful memories in my bag. Makes sense? The thing is, people are not always predictable, and I can't say that every experience I've ever had with people has been positive. Can you? No. No, so there has to be something. What is going to make us brave enough to anticipate a day, to want to engage with people, but to be open and vulnerable enough to do that? So that's what we're going to talk about today. when I engage with people, it's been a process over the years. It has shifted and changed. And this topic today, kind of being the best that we can be, caused me to think about how do I engage with other people? What do I bring to the table when I engage with people? And I think that one thing that I've learned in all of these years is that I may forget what other people do, but I always feel good about the engaging, whatever that looks like, when I have behaved in a way that is up to my standard of integrity, if you know what I mean. So the bar of integrity, or the bar that I have set for myself, is such. Okay, here it is. And so when I treat someone in a way that is below that bar, I don't feel good about myself. The times when I get irritated in traffic and yell out something that is well below the bar, that's not how I want to be. That is not the person I want to be. I want to be up here. So one thing, as we think about engaging, as we think about being with people, as we think about anticipating being with people, is to consider what our standards of integrity are. How are we going to act? We can't control what other people do or say, but we can control ourselves. And that, as I say, that has shifted and changed for me, and I think I've gotten, the bar has actually gone up a bit, and I'm not there all the time, but I'm getting closer. That is my intention, to try and get closer to that bar and exceed it as much as I can. When I was in graduate school, when I thought that I was going to be a counselor, I think one of the things that that really struck me was a therapist named Carl Rogers, and he had this, they call it the Rogerian theory of hold everyone that you deal with in positive regard. Okay, think about that. Now think about someone that you really don't like, and that person sits down in front of you, holding that person in positive regard. What that does is it calls us to be who we say we are in unity. It calls us to see that Christ self, because that's what we teach here. We teach that we are all, each and every one of us, created by a universe of love in that image. Now, sometimes that spark, that divinity that is within every person kind of gets covered up, but it's in there. And so my bar, and I would encourage you to think about this, perhaps your bar, is to be able to recognize that Christ in every person, regardless of what they say or do. Not an easy thing, but well worth it, I think. How do we do that? As I said, being this way, anticipating positive outcomes and engaging with people, makes us very vulnerable. It makes us open ourselves in ways that makes it pretty likely that someone's going to hurt our feelings, or worse. And how do we stand in that vulnerability? How do we stay in that place of this integrity? This is how I want to be. I think it's a two-legged step. I talked about the solitude, and I talked about the time and the silence, and that's what nourishes. We have to have a solid foundation in knowing the truth about ourselves, and that we have that, if you want to call it, a constant companion. You know, God and I are one. If we can rest in that, it gives us the courage, gives us the strength to be over here and be vulnerable, no matter who is saying what. And when I can call on that in traffic, then, that's right. There is a, on my, I have a little, I'll call it an altar. It's a little stand things, got shelves, like, kind of like a, well, I don't even know the names. Sorry, just forget all that. I have a little stand in my meditation room, and there's a blue disc thing, little saying, and it says, "Nothing can disturb the calm peace of my soul." Oh, what a wonderful thing. And that's what happens when we take the time to nourish ourselves, to get that strong foundation, to stay connected, so that then we can go out and do the things that will be within our standard of integrity, that will be brave, you know, from that foundation. Okay, so that's the motivation. So what would it look like? First, I think that we need to be able to understand one another. Not an easy thing to do. My sister and I, who I love, you know, way up there, peak, you know, my relationship with my sister is one of those great memories. And she and I came up in the same family, you know, same parents, same house, and yet our experiences are different. You know, I'm the older sister, she's the younger sister. We experienced our parents in different ways, not huge, you know, but some. So our father was more of a protector for her, he was more of a criticizer for me. So our experiences, even within the same family, even within the same time period, the same house, everything, they're different. So what chance then do we have at understanding each other if, you know, well, we have to work at it, like Neil was talking about in his story. So understanding is very important. I remember a time when I worked at Bell, I had a young woman in my work group, and she was very bright. She programmed. I was the project leader, and I would there was something, though, I could tell there was something between us, and I couldn't get through. And so I went with my normal way of dealing with people, and I tried to be nicer, and I'd ask about her family, and I'd go in and I'd sit and chat, you know, and all that. Well, then I went to a class, and it was one of those classes that talks about the different personality types. As it turns out, I'm an amiable. I'll bet you didn't know that, did you? I'm an amiable, and she was a directive, which meant that she was, let's get her done. You know, just give me the facts, and I'll go do it. We were driving each other crazy, and because she worked for me, she couldn't say anything, so she just, you know, sort of grinned and bared it, But once I learned that, it made such a difference. Then I learned to go into her office and say, here are the specs for this, we need this and this and this, and if, you know, the dates are this and the cost is this, and if you have any questions, I'm here. Let me know what I can do to, you know, smooth the way or answer any questions. And I'd start to leave, and then she'd ask me about my family. You know, she got what she needed, and then she would talk to me. It made such a difference in understanding. The class did not encourage me to be more like her or her to be more like me. We're still unique, but when we can understand each other, we are much better able to work together and all of that, and it makes such a difference. There are many examples of Diane, the young woman. Our cultures, you know, we do things differently with our cultures. We used to have some contracted workers from the Mideast, and they have a different person, or had anyway, had a different personal space mindset. So in the U.S., you know, we have a further away personal space, and the Mideastern people would get right up in your face, kind of like, and it would, you know, so both sides were thinking, you know, why is this person attacking me? And the others, what's wrong with this person? Why are they withdrawing? There are so many ways that we have differences. Understanding is very, very important. And the way we can use that is to begin to learn about each other. Trusting. It's hard. It's hard to trust people, I think. Early years, I was very gullible, you know, and I believed everybody. I'm still gullible, but not nearly as bad as I used to be. But trusting, bottom line is, what we need to do is when we when we are looking at that foundation, when we are deciding that we're willing to anticipate with joy, when we are willing to engage with people, understand them, then the trusting part, the trusting needs to rest on the foundation, rest on the awareness that God and God in you and as you will give you what you need to know to discern. So, we can then move through these experiences and be able to discern, who do I want to invite over for dinner, and who will I love from afar? We'll know if we can trust that we will know. Sometimes it's a shock, and maybe it's my generation. The end of my parents' generation, but I had a real hard time with that for a long time. So if someone talked to me or told me, a lawn care service comes to mind. I bought my house in Fenton some years back, 2006, and I looked around, the grass was not very good, and so I was wanting to improve that. A lawn service company that I had used for a number of years sent a representative. He came over, and we laid out a plan for, here's what we're going to do. Okay, my take on that was, okay, we are in this together. We are partners, and we're going to make my lawn better. I don't think that's exactly what he had in mind. No. So what began to happen was they came and did all of their things, their fertilizing, their crabgrass control, all of that, the grub treatments, all of that. They were doing all of that, but they would call me and say, we're going to have a truck in your area, and we can stop and do such and such. It's not in my plan. You didn't tell me before that I needed that. Well, no, but it would be good for it. Well, after a whole season of this, and in fact, they even offered me, or suggested that I have a second one of one that was already in my plan, I finally got it. I'm not always quick. I wasn't then. It was about the money, of course. And so in this trust thing too, trust the discernment. If it begins to feel not quite right, there's probably a reason for that. A good friend of mine in Texas, when I was down there, taught me, consider the source. So what I do, maybe it will be helpful, what I do is I try to look at what's in it for that person. What's in it for me and what's in it for that person. And if we have some mutual points of agreement, great, but if they're, you know, I just need to be aware that they're probably, they don't always have my best interest at heart. Rarely do they have my best interest at heart. That wasn't an easy lesson, but I'm finally getting it. So the trust thing is there, and trusting ourselves to be able to discern exactly what we need. We can stay in our wisdom. So all of this is to kind of talk about these sacred conversations. It is intended to be this part of it. These two sessions are for our community. If other people come, that is okay. But it is mostly intended for us to get to know each other at a deeper level, at a more vulnerable level. It is to understand some of my values, some of your values. What were my experiences? What were your experiences? That sacred conversation work, I think, is very important. And what will it do? It will help us to be more undivided. It will help us to really, really know each other, to build a community, a strong, strong community. I think this is an opportunity for Unity Church of Light to grow internally, perhaps externally, we'll see. But I think it also will just give us a tremendous foundation for having a wonderfully strong community. With that kind of foundation, we can do anything. You know, we have just finished talking about possibility. Our theme for this year is realizing expanding possibilities. And I think this is just one avenue of how we can do that. In any case, that doing that is, I'm wholeheartedly endorsing doing it. But in any case, I would suggest that you might think about some of these things in your own life too, in your personal life. Anticipate and understand and trust. And then you will have many, many more wonderful memories to put into your memory bag. Well, let's take an opportunity again, as we do each week, to practice that presence. So I invite you, if you haven't already, to gently close your outer eyes. Allow your bodies and your minds to become still. It is when we put aside all of the outer busyness and stimulus, activity, that we can settle into that knowing part of us, that loving part of ourselves, that Christ. And we do that purposely right now. Sometimes it's difficult to get our minds to be still, and one way to encourage that is to focus on the breath. We breathe in, notice how it feels to have your body holding that breath, and exhale, releasing as thoroughly and completely as you can. Observe the body as it releases. Continue to breathe deeply and slowly. Unity speaks much of silence. And the more we are able to experience that quiet, that stillness, the more we are able to be centered in our outer life, the more we are able to experience peace, love, and joy, just because. Not because of any outer circumstance or situation or experience, but just because that is our nature. That is the Christ nature. We consider today that we are here sitting in a sanctuary with loved church family members. We consider that we are sitting in St. Charles, in a community. We consider that we are sitting in Missouri, in the United States, in the world. And we have that view of the earth in our mind's eye. We are there. With every other human being. With every other living creature. With every tree. Every plant. We feel our oneness. We rejoice in our oneness. we trust in our oneness. And as we do each week, let us take some time in silence to experience the presence, to be in the presence, to be in the silence. We are one. We feel our togetherness. We feel the love that is contained in within these walls because it radiates out from each of us, expanding and enfolding, including we feel gratitude. Grateful that we are aware. Grateful that we know that we can go into this silence whenever we need guidance, whenever we need comfort, whenever we need strength, whenever we need wisdom. That awareness that God and I are one stands instead so that we can draw on that anytime, any place. We are grateful for this community, grateful for these people who come together in love each week, in fellowship, in service, in connection, in communion. In gratitude for our way shower, Jesus Christ, who taught, and I believe came to teach, love, so that we might have a model of how this is done. So in gratitude, in love, in joy, and in peace, we come together once again to repeat and affirm the words of our way-shower as we together affirm our Lord's Prayer.